Good morning to all of you. This is Ed Hosak at Cooperative Christian Ministry. I want to welcome you to this conference call where we're going to be sitting down with Jared Nichols from the Jared Nichols Group to talk about the concepts of strategic foresight and scenario planning. I want to just do a little bit of introduction as we get started. I want to encourage you first to be aware of any background noise. Perhaps you mute your phones that might interfere with others who are hearing the conference. I want you to know that we've muted on this end for now because this conference call is being recorded, so hopefully that will keep the quality of the recording as clear as possible. For that reason, because you're currently muted, we're going to reserve questions until the end, and I want to talk to you a little bit about the outline and the objective of this phone call. Our intent this morning is to have a conversation with Jared following the Strategic Perspectives and Nonprofit Management workshop last week that a number of you attended. I think there were 22 individuals who signed up for this conference and others who were invited after the fact who had expressed an interest. So we hope everyone is able to connect with us this morning. We'll have a conversation, perhaps in an interview format. We'll talk about some of the concepts that came up last week, and then we will open it up so that we can hear your questions. Our intent is to, from this conference call, we hope to prepare you a little bit for the workshop that will take place on September 24th, hopefully to help you see the value in being a part of that exercise and learning some of the techniques that Jared is going to share with us on the 24th. But also from your questions that we'll entertain in about 30 minutes, we can help him to structure that conversation so that we're addressing the things that you're most interested in. So with that having been said, note that we'll have this interview for about 30 minutes, and then we'll open up the line for questions from you that will be recorded, but also it will allow Jared to answer some of your questions and prepare for the workshop on the 24th. So let's take a moment and look back at last week's workshop. There was so much that came at us in just a quick hour, but recapping the highlights from that workshop, here are some of the things that we heard. The rate of change is increasing. In fact, put this way, it is a constant accelerating change, not only in our sector, but in our society, and it's creating challenges for us unlike any that we faced before. We're seeing a performance-driven nonprofit sector. It's not only a move toward private sector investment in nonprofits, but government agencies are now starting to pay for performance. In other words, they want to see the results before the grant is delivered. We need to demonstrate impact in our community so that the community can differentiate the work we're doing perhaps from what someone else is doing. It's important, we heard, to stay relevant, to have the ability to adapt as needs are changing and methods are changing in our community. We in the nonprofit sector have to stay nimble or flexible or adaptable to the changes that are taking place out there. And then lastly, but certainly not the least, is the expectation in the community today, and certainly within those who are coming along as millennials, for us to collaborate and to utilize technology. But one of the things that we're hearing and maybe perhaps learning is that collaboration and technology will begin to blur the lines between our separate organizations. And that in itself can affect it can challenge us in terms of developing loyalties with our organizations, but it's important that we recognize that the next generation of leaders are less interested in distinct organizations and more interested, more inclined to engagement and to seeing results. They're able to connect in a moment with thousands of people and collaborate to accomplish something very quickly. They expect us to be able to do the same. Well, if that's not enough, one of the things that's so very important and so critical is that we continue to plan. But when we look at our traditional planning, our strategic planning, so often in the past, that has involved external and internal environmental assessments and SWOT analyses for strengths and weaknesses, and then developing a plan that focuses on a point 2 to 3 to 5 years out, and investing your organization, all of your assets and resources to accomplishing that plan or reaching that point. What we're learning today that is that over the course of a two and a half years, we can find ourselves making tremendous progress toward a place that we no longer need to be. In that environment is where I had the opportunity and the privilege of crossing paths with Jared Nichols, thanks to the Cabarrus County Chamber of Commerce and a project that he was doing with our school systems. And Jared introduced the concept of strategic foresight and scenario planning. And we began a conversation that that drew me in and found a strong reception with the Board of Directors of Cooperative Christian Ministry. And we're convinced that this is a message that we in the nonprofit sector need to hear as we plan for the future. So Jared Nichols of the Jared Nichols Group, empowering organizations to shape the future. Imagine that, actually shaping the future for our organizations. And so Jared is here with us. He has written a number of books. I have read Four Futures for the 21st Century Nonprofit, which I think really strengthened these concepts for me. He's written Leadership in the 21st Century, Rethinking Reinvention, and the most recent that I just became aware of is Rethinking Your Next Quarter Century. Now, imagine that. And yet, I saw that and I thought, you know, Cooperative Christian Ministry and one of our key facilities has a 40-year lease that is up in 14 years. And at what point do you begin planning for that kind of change in the future? So Jared is here. His first inclination is to look way out into the future and then begin the process of planning. Jared, you and I have had a number of conversations. We sort of agree on the concept of constant accelerating change. Only you believe that there are techniques that we can look out into the future and begin to prepare for that future so that we can not only survive as a nonprofit sector, but so that we can thrive. And I appreciate your being here today. Welcome.
No, it's great to be here. Yeah, this is certainly a topic I love to discuss.
So how should the nonprofit sector be responding today to this rate of change?
Well, you know, I think my first answer to that would be they should be responding in the same way that every organization and individual should respond, and that is by just taking into account, one, what's going on in the external environment. So there's so much change going on. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find anybody who would disagree with the statement that the change is happening at a much more accelerated rate. But I think the difficulty that organizations, both for-profit, non-profit, you know, government institutions, it doesn't matter what sector you're working in, the key obstacle is to remove themselves from the paradigm of their industry or how they see themselves. So nonprofits see themselves in a unique space, which, of course, they are. But, you know, both the for-profit and non-profit, they're going to have limitations thinking, well, this is how we operate. This is how business is done. This is what our role has traditionally been. So oftentimes the bias of the industry bias is never really checked. And that is really the first thing that needs to happen in order to start thinking about being more proactive and how do we get ahead of the change? How do we really start to do things differently in a way that's going to make an impact? Until that happens, there's going to be a constant fear or a sense of or greater sense of risk aversion because of the unknowns. And that's where a lot of the difficulty with this way of thinking, this way of the future, looking at the future, comes with the older traditional models, which there's still a lot of great and applicable things there. They just need to be rethought, redesigned in order to be effective. I think you and I talked previously, Ed, that the worst thing for some people, and I can attest to this for myself, What's worse than going full speed in the wrong direction is sitting still. My whole family is kind of wired this way, is that if we're sitting still, then we just kind of feel useless. We probably need more counseling for that. But you know, the fact is that a lot of organizations operate the same way, especially as change continues to accelerate. So the first thing is, for nonprofits, is to step back and say, what blind spots do we have because we're a nonprofit, and what can we be rethinking about the way we approach the future and approach change?
Okay. You know, you're advocating, it seems, that we need to be thinking more like the business sector. And these are concepts that you're taking successfully into the business sector, into education and government, and getting a great response as people consider the whole concept of shaping the future. Now, we in the nonprofit sector, we like, especially those who have been on both sides, business, for-profit and nonprofit, like to say the guys on the nonprofit side got it easy. They've got a customer-supplier relationship, and they know what their goal is, make money. Okay, but on our side, the complexities of our mission and performing against that mission involve issues that affect the people we serve, like employment and housing and health care and all of those issues. And then on our side of the tracks, where our funders are focused on those issues, you know, we're trying to address those while we're trying to figure out electronic communication, social media, technology, how to measure our outcomes, how to differentiate ourselves in a sea of nonprofits, okay? You know, how do you see this complexity affecting the nonprofit differently than the for-profit?
Well, you know, the internal workings of an organization are all going to be unique to that organization. Something you said earlier is that, you know, almost differentiating between the business sector and nonprofit. I mean, nonprofits, my wife is a social worker, and so she and I have these conversations quite a bit. But a nonprofit has to understand that you are a business. You're just not in the business of making profit. I mean, if we just get cut and dry, nonprofits have to see themselves that way. They have to operate in an organized way. And in order to do that, then, you know, the things that are going on within a nonprofit, the unique aspects of the organization need to apply to, you know, the way that they approach the future. But for nonprofit organizations, I think uniquely for them, they have to move away. Traditionally, they've been kind of seen more as a disaster response, right? There's a need that arises in the community, and there's an organization that steps up to fill that need. But those needs continue to come up faster and faster. When we see accelerated change in the world and job market, the economy, all these different factors that shape the context of the future, when we see these things accelerating, it's harder for organizations to, as you said in the early part of this call, be nimble, be adaptive, and to look at, okay, how can we make sure that we're positioned and ready for these types of situations when they come up? Because for most, the implications of what's going on today are unclear. How do we know, you know, what implications, say, the economy is going to have on workforce, or what implications that, you know, the increase of artificial intelligence and robotics and manufacturing is going to have on our specific location here. So not knowing creates that problem of, well, how do we become a disaster response, you know, type of organization? I know that's kind of a heavy, you know, we're not talking about FEMA necessarily here, but how do we move from being response-driven to being more proactive and anticipating? So that's really the key is looking at how can we look at several alternative possibilities based on what we see going on today that may happen over the next 5, 10, and even 15 years, and then that helps to better inform the type of strategies and decisions that are being made today.
So let's talk about that, the things that we see happening today. Well, you know, part of my objective here is for all of us to grasp how important it is to take the time a few weeks from now and sit down and look at these concepts and look at the process and that helps us develop a strategy, if you will, okay? We can all identify with the issues and the changes that are hitting us every single day, but we're so focused on our mission. There's a lot of things changing that are beyond our radar, okay? But things that nevertheless are going to impact us either through our donors, our partners, legislative change, or whatever the case might be. Talk to us a little bit about how we need to become more aware of the things that are changing outside of our scope.
Yeah, this is something I found this area in particular is probably the area that receives the most attention in the work that I do with clients, regardless of their sector. And that is just becoming aware of what's going on outside of their industry and what's going on outside of their community, even outside of their region. We're bombarded by so much information today, which has its benefits and, of course, its drawbacks. But the key for people is knowing where to look for the right type of information, what to filter, what to take in, what to ignore. And that really starts by first identifying what type of questions you need to be asking. What are some of the bigger concerns that we have right now? One that comes up quite often is what is the future of the economy? I mean, how is that going to have an impact on us in this region? Or how might certain types of technologies impact the way in which we operate as an organization or how we function as a community? And the key there is to get very specific and say what impact might X, Y, or Z have on the future of housing development in Cabarrus County. Once you have what I like to look at as exploratory themes, I think that's the easiest way to look at that, then you can start to look for indicators, look for signs of things that are going on in the outside world that can maybe give you more clarity on that. Most people tend to, and I talk about this a little bit in the book, Rethinking Your Next Quarter Century, and that's all process-driven. It's not a fluffy, light tale of nice stories and concepts, but it's all process-driven. And the way in which we start to look for information or we want to get a better understanding of what's going on around us is we have to differentiate at what point we start looking for certain signs of change. And I broke those into three different stages. And the first stage is the weak signal stage. And a weak signal stage is something you see as a blip on the radar, something that's way off in the way down the road that may have very little significance to the vast majority of people. Maybe it's just something that's industry specific. Maybe even in that regard, it's minimal. That's a weak signal. That's stage one. Stage two is where it starts to gain potential, becomes a potential event, potential trend, potential issue, and that's where it's become a little bit more. It's moving a little bit closer to us, and it has more relevance to those outside of the industry or whatever it may be. But most people are still fairly skeptical or completely unaware that it's even there. And then it moves into stage three, which is the actual event stage. And this is where most people tend to get their information about what's going on. This stage three is where you see it on the nightly news. And nightly news, I'm just not a regardless of all the polarization going on in news media today, anything that is being reported as, on nightly news or daily news is way behind. There's nothing you can do with that information except react to it. And so the key is learning how to spot situations and issues when they're in the early stages, weak signals, and in the potential event stage, and then you can start to take action around those.
Yeah. Jared, you caused me to think now, my being a good 20-plus years older than you, my generation saw that weak signal as the light at the end of the tunnel that we associated with a train. Only today it's moving at light speed and it hits us before we're ready.
Right.
So that's why we're here talking about potential scenarios and scenario planning. So let's unpack a little bit the concept of scenario planning.
Sure.
and what that would look like when we come together and you start laying out a process.
Yeah. Well, scenario planning can take on several different forms. What we'll most likely do in the workshop, and again, I like to be able to adapt the day of and say, okay, what type of specific issues are we trying to look at, and which we'll gather after this call and from some other folks as well. But in general, scenario planning, the easiest way to approach it is to look at it's about looking at a series of alternative future possibilities, looking at different scenarios. Most people that I've talked to and in conversations, things that you read from folks, so we're preparing for one inevitable or predetermined outcome. And so that's where the difficulty comes in. Our mindset is focused on one future. Everything is this linear path to from point A to Z. That's what we're trying to prepare for. But the reality is that, and I always like to emphasize this, and this helps people to rethink the way they view the future, is that the future never actually gets here. Right? If it did, it would be the present. It would no longer be the future. So we're always preparing for this thing, this space out in front of us to hit us like the train, right? But instead, we have to think about it in this way that the future is only the future as long as it's out in front of us. And if that's the case, then it means that there's infinite possibilities of the way in which that can be shaped. There are those throughout history where things have changed rapidly that are swept under the rug, wiped out, industries, peoples, everything else. And there are those that jump on those opportunities without even, they don't need full confidence that the house is going to turn out. They just said, stick with the train example here. This train's moving fast. We're going to jump on it. We're not really sure where it's going to go, but we know we need to be going down this direction here. You know, the key is for organizations to start to evaluate the way in which they plan for the future as a series of alternative possibilities, and that's what scenario planning really is. It's not to predict the future and say that this is what is going to happen. Instead, it's to say, based on what we see going on today, you can take any type of trend, issue, technology, whatever it is that you may be concerned with. Based on what we see going on today, what are the potential implications that this technology trend, issue, or event has on the next 5, 10, 15 years?
And so the presumption is that within our organizations, we have the expertise, we have the experience, we have the collective wisdom to anticipate certain things will develop. It's just a matter of not knowing exactly what the future holds.
Well, exactly. You and I spoke about this earlier, that typically when looking at scenarios and scenario planning, we're looking at, I jokingly heard this stated, and I can resonate with this, that futures, for those of us in the field, don't get out of bed for anything less than 5 years. A colleague of mine had said that once. I thought it was very true. But that being said, the reason why is because anything within the first 1 to 5 years is typically the main thing that you can do with that is to find the best way to respond and react to those things because they're already in motion in such a degree that you cannot necessarily impact the direction of which those things will move or change. That being said, being more aware of what's going on, you know, in the external environment, what's going on in the world, in the nation, and just being aware, having a much more comprehensive view of that, still gives you a significant advantage over those who are just, you know, got the blinders on and just focused on, here's our point, as you'd mentioned earlier, we put the stake in the ground, and we're going to drive full force to get to that stake, and we don't care what, we care what's going on, but if we don't know how to deal with it, we're just going to keep plowing ahead. Looking at alternative scenarios, looking at the way in which the world may turn out, then allows the expertise and the resources that you have in your organization to be utilized in a much more effective and practical way.
Okay. So we're planning a workshop for September 24th.
Mm-hmm.
We've set aside a few hours where we're going to be meeting. We'll have the details of that in just a few moments. We're going to start taking questions from those who are on the line in just a few moments. Tell us, with the workshop that you're planning, what can those who will attend expect to find or to experience at that workshop?
Well, for this workshop, this is the type of workshop that I like to run with folks to give them just a taste of what scenario planning and foresight is like. And the key for this is that you have to give yourself permission to consider the absurd. And I'll talk about this in the workshop as well, because what we'll be doing is we're going to take the trends, issues, events, things that are going on today. Some, and most people, I would assume, are familiar with these, but some may not be, and of course we'll be going through that during the workshop. But to take something like, say, genetic modification or artificial intelligence or drone technology or changes in climate and weather and whatever type of situation we're looking at, and then look at those things and ask critical questions, ask questions around how these things may impact various facets of society, the STEEP categories, which I've talked about in the books, but it's also probably the easiest and most comprehensive, or not most comprehensive, excuse me, but covers a wide net of looking at the social, technological, economic, environmental, and political impacts that a trend issue event may have. And the reason we do that is because in order for us to think about the future and plan for the future, we have to create context for the future, and that's the first and most important thing. Most of us tend to, and this is human nature, we're going to deal with what we know and we're going to run headlong and say, well, this is possible, this isn't possible. But the key for anticipating change and being proactive is that we have to be able to create potential context, and that's a scenario. That's the framework for a scenario in a lot of ways. But, you know, I take Facebook as an example, social media. 2003, I believe, that came out, and that was, it was basically a hookup connection for Ivy League college kids, you know, and less than 10 years later, it's the key tool that's being used in the Arab Spring. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find, you know, sit down with Mark Zuckerberg back in 2002, 2003 and say, hey, you know, for him to say, oh, yeah, I definitely see this as doing this now, but I think this will start to overthrow 40-plus year dictatorships around the world. And, you know, you just people don't think about that. So that's really the key, is to say, well, how can this potentially be transferred into other aspects of our culture, of our world, or society, and then what type of context does that create? And that gives us a much more clear picture of what's possible. So the workshop is going to really stretch people to use their imagination, think about what's possible, and entertain absurd ideas, and that's really the first step. We have to get the biases, the blinders off. Mm-hmm.
Well, I recognize that I've spent some time with these concepts and had a chance to read a little bit of what you've written on it, and how hard it is to internalize the concepts in the course of the conversation. And so oftentimes, maybe it's in both sectors, but certainly in the nonprofit sector, folks will offer us all types of advice and direction, but not so often be willing to sit down and take us through a step-by-step process, a logical order that shows us how to look at the questions, frame the question, then go on to the next step. And that's what you're going to do on September 24th, and that's why CCM has been so interested in tagging along behind you and learning from you, is because we need some guidance in terms of how to adapt to this kind of thinking and how to begin to plan, because it's not a decision not to plan, but it's to plan to looking at the future in a different way. And so the workshop on the 24th will involve some of those processes and those steps, and I think that's going to be helpful to a lot of the folks who are listening.
Well, and I just want to add one thing here as well, because I think you bring up a really important point, and that is that so many, where I said earlier that the key of the workshop is to get people to think about the absurd and really challenge their notions and ideas. But really what you just demonstrated is the most important thing, that we have to be willing to learn and adapt. I have people tell me many times that, oh, we need somebody to teach us this or somebody we can follow through this. And I mean this in all sincerity. Sometimes I feel like I get more out of, you know, and not to you know, put down that the workshop's going to be great, but I'm always learning things. One of the things that I've come to really enjoy is that I don't have all the answers, and so I never want to give people the idea that I do, or that this is right or this is wrong, but it's always a series of possibilities. Because the reality is this, is that change is always going to happen, and we're always changing. I mean, that's been proven. Many people like to, you know, I've been the same for this or that, I've been for 20 plus years, 30 years, but the reality is that we're not. I mean, physically, emotionally, spiritually, we're changing all the time. The key, though, is this. Is that growth and learning is the choice. We're changing regardless whether we think we are or not. Growing is the choice that we have to make, and this is really about stretching ourselves and growing further and learning what we can and using that to really be more of a proactive part of that change.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to have an opportunity to learn some more right now, because we're going to open up. We've unmuted our phone, and we want to give an opportunity in just a moment for folks who are listening to ask you some questions that we may or may not answer today, but we'll be more prepared to answer them on the 24th, depending on the questions. Let me just say this so that in case someone does have to leave, as it's about 10:30, the workshop that we will have is scheduled for September 24th from 9 a.m. till noon. That's the time that we've allotted. It will be at Crossroads Church out on George Lyles Parkway. That information will be available on CCM's website in case you have to confirm that. September 24th from 9 to 12. Let me say this. We are limiting the workshop to 30 people. We want to have an interactive, intimate environment where everybody can engage. We're allowing up to 3 people per organization. So we're anticipating 10 to 15 organizations will participate in this workshop. We're also asking that at least one of the individuals from the organization be either the executive director or the individual on your board who is responsible for strategic planning. We want to make sure that that the folks that are present are engaged in the concept of planning and are going to be able to take these concepts and put them to work without having to try to re-educate an entire board. We understand that challenge. And finally, if you're listening in but you haven't connected and you'd like to make sure that you get the information and get registered for that workshop on the 24th, you can do that by emailing JoniReeder@cooperativeministry.com, and it's JReeder, R-E-E-D-E-R, at cooperativeministry, with a Y, .com. Her contact information is also available on our website, and we would ask that you register by September 11th so that we can make sure that we round out the class. Okay, so I'd like to open the floor, so to speak. I would ask you if you'd like to ask a question, please just identify yourself and perhaps your organization, and we'll recognize you and invite you to make comment or question. Who will go first? I would ask the group just perhaps to generate some conversation even amongst us. What are the challenges that you are seeing, whether it's in the environment or the community around you, that present the biggest challenges to your organization? Anyone have a response for that?
Hi there, Ed. This is Lauren Thomas with Healthy Cabarrus.
Yes, Lauren.
Hi. Thank you so much. The scenario planning is really an interesting way to kind of frame strategic planning. And I have a question as well as sort of a want to just hear some more insight onto the statement of consider the absurd. Could Jared go into a little bit more about that and kind of how do you facilitate a conversation around with your stakeholders around considering the absurd?
That's a great question. Lauren, correct?
Yes.
Lauren. So considering the absurd, I'm certain I'll use this in the workshop as well. But the example I like to use is this, and I use a photograph that was taken during the Civil War. And so the first part of the answer to this question is find a very old photograph. And I want you to, you can lay it down in front of your board or put folks in your organization. I said, now I want you to imagine sitting, whether it's a table or being in that photograph of those people, and then ask them to explain things like the iPod or the iPad or drone technology or embedded technology, big data, everything that we have going on today. And the reason I asked them to do that is because they would sound like raving lunatics and would have probably been jailed or who knows. I mean, but the point is that in order for us to think about the real impact of what's going on today and how that can expand out into the future and create the future, is that we have to give ourselves permission to think about absurd possibilities. Because what's going on today would be absolutely unthinkable and absurd to folks, even 60, 70 years ago. So that's really the first part there, is we have so much information now that we think we've got it all figured out in a lot of ways, but the reality is we just don't. So does that answer that part of your question?
Sure. I guess whenever you were saying consider the absurd, I was, in my mind, I was kind of going down a path of if we don't intervene in this social health issue, consider where our trajectory will go, down this negative path. But it sounds like what you were saying is different, and that's helpful. That's helpful.
Yeah, you definitely want to look at it in two different ways. The absurd is the crazy things that usually would be reserved for science fiction. Uncovering potential impacts or implications is what I think you were originally thinking about, and that is that being able to say if we don't think about this or position ourselves for this possibility, then we could be in serious trouble, whether it's financially, organizationally, any of those types of things. That's very key. But again, the point there is that that would be looking more at the potential impacts and implications of something that's going on right now that you still have enough time to actually take action either shape, redirect, or prevent.
Yep. Lauren, the concept, one of the concepts that you introduced there, I've heard represented as the counterfactual, which is the question, what would happen if your intervention did not exist? What would happen if your organization did not exist? And, of course, it seems impossible to prove. But nevertheless, it's an important question. And there are things that our organizations rely on, directly or indirectly. And what if you presented the same question? What if that did not exist? It causes us to look at the future a little bit differently. Thanks, Lauren, for asking that question. Any other comments or questions you'd like to ask to help Jared prepare for the workshop?
Don't be shy.
This is Zenobia Nelson with Operation Breadbasket. And this may sound a little funny, but you mentioned that you must be able to identify the right questions to ask. What if you don't know the right questions?
That is a great question. Knowing the right questions is really important. And that's right. So I look at this in two different ways. There are critical questions that we need to ask about the future of our organization. But before we can get to those critical questions, we need to ask broader, or we need to look at broader exploratory themes. So if you would, and I'll ask you this question, can you give me something that's going on today that is of concern to you and your organization, that you're not fully satisfied with maybe the answers that have been given, or there's just a lot of speculation, nobody's not sure about what type of impact that may have down the road? Is there a specific thing you can share with me?
Okay. All right, thank you.
Oh, no, I was asking you a question there. Is there some...
Oh, that was a question for me?
Yes, ma'am.
Don't know exactly what at the moment.
Ed, let me ask you this.
I am actually new to all of this, so I'm learning and trying to absorb as much as I can.
Oh, that's good. That's good.
Well, you know, you consider decisions made politically within government, and certainly there's plenty of reason to recognize that there will be decisions made. You know, there's enough issues with budget, there's enough issues with people not agreeing with each other, that there are going to be factors that affect all of our nonprofits, you know, relative to funding. And relative to the legislative changes that could impact our position in the community. And to Zenobia's point, who knows what question to ask to try to get the answer? And this is where I think in the environment we're talking about, we don't know the answer, but maybe we can develop some of the potential scenarios.
Right.
This could happen or that could happen, and maybe there's a third interval as well.
Well, you know, and if you talk about legislation, policy, this is the last stage. I mean, government is highly reactive. You can't really look at government and say, oh, this is a very proactive body, and that's, you know, around, at least in the U.S. for sure. And you can say, so, you know, when something gets to the legislative stage, then there's little that you can do about it to really change it, move it in a different direction. And this is kind of relates back to what we talked about earlier. In the 1 to 5 year range, which is where most people have been making their plans, most legislation, most things have been put into play that are going to either to show up, have a certain impact, some will benefit, some will not benefit. And that's the key, is that you want to be able to identify potential issues that may that are maybe just on the fringes now, or maybe just coming up in conversations within nonprofits. Once it gets to public discourse, and then it becomes a much larger issue, and this is actually happening much faster. Technology is not the only thing that's moving at a rapid pace, but social change is happening at a much faster pace because of how connected we are. Once something gets to the floor of Congress, it's too late to actually do anything that, it's too late to be proactive as an organization. The key is to identify the potential situations that may arise that could become public policy that can have a dramatic impact on your organization or your community or the people that you serve, identify those things early on. One of the ways in which or I try to encourage people to do is think about when they're thinking about reinventing themselves or their organizations, is that most have said, well, we need to identify a market need and then just meet that need. But that doesn't really work anymore. The key is to say, who are the people that we serve and what are the greatest obstacles they're facing over the next 1 to 5 to 10 years? Anticipating those types of issues, understanding those, gives you a much better, clearer picture of what type of policies and legislations may be introduced if certain things do occur.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what gets you into a place where you can start to become more proactive instead of waiting on what's going to happen in the government.
That causes me to think of a legislative change that's pending now that I think has a more dramatic effect on nonprofits, where our employee base works a more erratic schedule, not fixed schedules. We do nights, weekends, and whenever things are happening. Sometimes it's responding to disaster or crisis. And there's pending legislation related to the Fair Labor Standards Act that I think will have a more dramatic impact on nonprofits than it will be for-profits as we try to staff to address the issues. Where it seems like we say at times perhaps things happen very, very slow in Washington or in Raleigh, there actually are things happening that are not on our radar that are going to come back around and make it more difficult for us as executive directors and board members to do the things that we have to do just to deliver the services that we deliver.
Right.
So there's many facets there.
Well, yeah, absolutely. A little off topic there. I mean, you see these things about, and we can maybe go into this in the workshop in more detail, but just looking at the future of the workforce, the talent market, what that looks like. An interesting thing, maybe just some food for thought here, a lot of these issues, legislation that's coming down, are dealing with, you know, how many hours, for example, in order to, if you're a full-time salaried employee, the income that you make has gone up to where you can actually get overtime. And this is an issue a lot of organizations are looking at, how is this going to impact them and so on. But even stepping back and saying, have we even asked the question, why is it we structure pay and incentives and, you know, our entire metrics for somebody's value in a workplace around time? So if you, you know, and this is a little bit off topic here, but just to give you an example, the millennial generation and a lot of folks here, we value quality of life over quantity of stuff.
Right.
You know, that's really the change that's been taking place. We want more life experiences. And so you have this on-demand talent market, for one, that's out there that more companies are looking at. But you also have a 21st century worker who has multiple talents that they know now that they can leverage in several different places. The issues we see arising in Washington, these different standards that are being, you know, put into place, is, I think, because we're still using an antiquated system of our workforce employer-employee relationship. We pay people based on the number of hours they spend at the office, which is ridiculous. It's already been shown that most CEOs are really happy they can get 2.5 solid hours of productivity out of their employees who are maybe there for an 8-hour day.
Wow.
So really rethinking the way in which we look at how we hire people and how we even put somebody's value or how we pay them can help to eliminate a lot of the issues, even, you know, such as inequality and equality in the workplace, women being paid less than men in several different types of organizations. You know, if your value's in your time, or if your value's not in your time, but it's in what you contribute to the growth of the company, then issues like maternity leave are no longer an issue. And so we have to completely rethink the structure of which we operate in order to really see some dramatic change, because these things will happen eventually. You know, we're outgrowing these old systems. So anyway.
So when you talk about talent, I want to say something that is my own bias and observation, and that is that I believe that some of the best leadership talent in our community and in our state and in our nation is in the nonprofit world.
Mm-hmm.
Some of that has transitioned from the for-profit world, where we began a learning process to learn how to manage in the nonprofit world. I see this scenario planning as an opportunity in our community for the nonprofit sector to take the lead and perhaps share what we're learning in the process with the for-profit sector as we adapt and change to meet the needs that our community is counting on us to meet.
Absolutely.
So on September 24th, we're going to get together. Now, what is it you ask of this group to be prepared for your workshop on the 24th?
Well, of course, you know, come with an open mind. You all are going to be doing 80% of the work, 90%. So if it completely fails, it's all on you. No, I mean, we're going to have a lot of fun. But definitely come with an open mind and be thinking about, you know, you're going to be in a safe place to ask crazy questions. And believe this, I don't think anybody can ask a crazy question that would shock me.
Anything else they can do to prepare for that day?
Yeah, one of the things that I'm going to do is, and I'll coordinate with Ed and Joni here, I'm going to send the folks that register for this and send a copy of the book, Rethinking Your Next Quarter Century, the newest one that I bought. I'll send an electronic version of that. And just to read through that, it's short, but it will give you a much, I think it will prepare everybody that's going to be in the workshop. It'll put us all in the same place so we don't have to spend a lot of time unpacking a complete shift in the way that we think. So I'll be sending that out to folks.
Okay, very good. So if you're online, you'd like to have a copy of that, make sure that Joni has your email address. Once again, you can go to CCM's website and get Joni's email. It's jreeder@cooperativeministry.com. We've used